The first reading that we heard was taken from one of the writings of the so-called minor prophets by the name of Zechariah. This prophet was shown several visions by the Lord, one of which was a vision of Jerusalem. We might say Jerusalem restored, for this prophet lived in a time after the former Jerusalem, the Jerusalem of the Old Testament, had been swept away, namely that Jerusalem after the Israelites had come to the Promised Land, that Jerusalem in which the Temple of Solomon was built, was established, was a place of worship for the Israelites, where the presence of the Lord was. But this Jerusalem and the Temple of Solomon was swept away by Babylon in 587 BC. And for the remnant of Israel that remained, that had been exiled, that was not destroyed by the various calamities which befell the old Israel, it was a time of great disillusion. For it seemed to them that Jerusalem was not to be destroyed. However, the unfaithfulness of the Israelites themselves, this is what was behind the destruction of Jerusalem. The Lord is always faithful to his promises, but when he enters into a covenant with man, it then behooves man, with whom the Lord enters into a covenant, to keep his promises to God. If man keeps his promises to God, then man will be abundantly blessed by the Lord, beginning in this life, but fully in the next life. If man keeps not his promises before God, then there are consequences, and the greater offense that we give God, the greater punishment is due. So in the Old Testament, the destruction of Jerusalem, this was the ultimate, the destruction, as it were, of all their hope, all that they had hoped for, was swept away before their eyes. So complete was their repudiation of the Lord, however. That was the significance. But the Lord cannot be driven by human events. He is not one to be the object of contingent events. Rather, he is the Lord, he is the author of history, he is the one who writes the history books in the end. And it is by his goodness that any restoration takes place. For the sweeping away of Jerusalem in Old Testament times was not to be the end of everything, but rather the occasion for not simply a display of the power and justice of our Lord, but also a display of his goodness and mercy. And so he presented a vision to this prophet Zechariah of a new Jerusalem, a Jerusalem that would be restored. But it was not intended to simply to be a restoration of what was from old. For the Israelites could not simply turn back the clock. This was not possible. No matter how much they might have longed for the time of the kings, or the time even before the kings, this was not to be. God did not simply have in mind to restore the old things. What he had in mind was something much greater. And so this Jerusalem signified something much greater as well, not just that earthly city, but what was to come. And the later saints and holy doctors of the church recognized that this new Jerusalem symbolized the church that was to come. The church born from the side of Christ. The church that once born from the side of Christ remains through the end of time and gathered into one in the kingdom that we hope to enter after this life. The church which is perfect, because this church has God as its protector, as is said here, No? The encircling wall is one of fire, and the Lord himself is glory in her midst. When the Israelites returned from exile, after they had been exiled upon the destruction of Jerusalem, they were commanded by our Lord through other prophets to rebuild the temple, to begin rebuilding the cities. But after they had completed this effort, they were crestfallen because they realized that what they had endeavored to do fell far short of the earthly glory of the city of Jerusalem before its fall, before the exile of the Israelites, and that the temple that they had rebuilt fell far short of the glory of the temple of Solomon. But the Lord wished through this to show the Israelites that it is not by man but by God that all things persist, that all things reach their ultimate glory. For you and I, exerting our efforts, though we are commanded to do so by our Lord, just as our Lord commanded those Israelites to return and according to the best of their abilities to rebuild the city of Jerusalem, rebuild the temple, so he commands us to strive according to the best of our abilities, according to whatever measure of talent, according to the knowledge that we have been given. We must strive to live according to we know our Lord, how our Lord wants us to live. He commands us, that is, just as he commanded those Israelites of old, to be faithful to the covenant. But in this case, for us, it's the new covenant, that perfect, that eternal covenant. The Lord again keeps his end, and we know that his promises are sure because he laid down his life for us. We, for our part, must expend our total energies, returning something to the Lord, what he has given to us. But in the end, whatever effort we put forth on our own will never suffice. It is the Lord who will inspire every effort in us. It is the grace of the Lord, that very precious treasure, that gift won for us by Christ while he laid down his life for us on the cross. It is this grace, this is what permits us to be true citizens of that heavenly Jerusalem, not something that falls far short, not something that we can be ashamed of, but a work that our Lord can be truly proud of. And we know that this is possible because we see this realized in one person who is also symbolized by that Jerusalem given in vision to the prophet, and it is the mother of Jesus, the Immaculate Virgin Mary. In her we see the perfection of what we all are aiming for, but not as individuals, but as members of the church. We see in her the church reaching full perfection. And that is what we are striving for, and that is why we must entrust ourselves to her, because it is her in whom we see this perfection and in no one else. God made her perfect, filled her with grace, made her the full of grace, the immaculate, in order that his only begotten Son would dwell in a worthy tabernacle. And once having filled her with grace, once having made her the Immaculate Conception, he does not change his mind. Our Lady is not immaculate one moment and she ceases to be immaculate the next. No, she is, from the first moment of her existence, forevermore, the Immaculate. That guarantee, that seal of the sureness of the promises of God, that the dwelling place prepared by God for us is an everlasting dwelling place. If we choose to cooperate, if we choose to be faithful. And marvel of marvels is that it is Our Lady herself who will help us with this work, which is another reason why we must commend ourselves to her, because she is that help that God has given us. Of ourselves, we will accomplish hardly anything, but in Our Lady and acting as Our Lady, if we allow ourselves to be transformed into her, that dwelling place comes to perfection in us, so that Jesus becomes pleased to dwell in us if we allow Our Lady to transform us, because He will find her in us, you see? That's how Jesus will be pleased to dwell in us, not on our own merits, but on the merits of Jesus and Mary, those graces obtained for us by Mary. That's why we have to become transformed into Our Lady, because Jesus wants to find her there, and He must find her there. And He will ask us if we are not attentive to allowing ourselves to be transformed into Our Lady on the Day of Judgment. Why did you not let my mother in? Why did you not let your heart be formed by her? That's all that you had to do. It was really that simple. We do not want to face that reproach, do we not? For we already know that we have all the means at our disposal, Our Blessed Lady herself. And she wants this transformation to occur much more than we ourselves do. So let us on this Saturday, in honor of Our Lady, renew our act of entrustment to her, our consecration to her, and ask her to enter into those closed spaces of our heart, those parts of our heart that we have not yet given her, that we are afraid to give her, that we want to hold on to ourselves, all those things, all those sins, all those things that embarrass us, that maybe we would not want to reveal to another, but we can confide in Our Lady, and we must. And she thinks we don't even know ourselves. And she will take these things and mold them into the likeness of the heart of her Son, so that her Son, finding a heart after the likeness of His mother, will wish to dwell there forever. Praise be Jesus and Mary.